Christian Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The 10 Best Decisions a Single Mom Can Make, a Biblical Guide for Navigating Family Life on Your Own, by Pam Farrell and Peggy Sue Wells, narrated by Susan Hanfield. Foreword. True Confession. The first time I ever wrote and spoke on the topic of single parenting, I had never thought of my mother as being one. Likewise, I had never thought of myself as having grown up in a single-parent home until now. Literally, now. Yet that was my circumstance. Why the confusion? When people typically hear the term single-parent, they picture a female who is parenting alone due to the death, desertion, or divorce of a mate. Of course, some experience solo parenting due to the extended distance of a mate, an extended absence because of military, hospitalization, employment, or imprisonment. Still, this was not my situation. In truth, my family situation was complex, awkward, and embarrassing. And for years I couldn't speak of it, feeling like I had a cork in my throat. Now I see my family's single-parent condition as the decision of an unmarried parent to raise her children alone, and in my situation, with a father who unexpectedly came in and out. My older brother, two younger sisters, and I didn't have a daddy, although we knew who our father was. He periodically came to our home in the evenings, and we occasionally would all go on a trip together. We called him Partner. A strange name for your father, but no one spoke of it. Why no clarity about family dynamics? In my early years, I was taught how to fill out forms for school. Father, R.E. Wright. Occupation, cattleman. The problem with this is that none of it was true. My dad's identity was completely disguised. He did own some cattle, but that was not his occupation. My own name, June Wright, was fictitious. We were called the Wright family, but it was all wrong. At some point, I knew my father was married to another woman, and I later learned he had three families at the same time, two in Dallas and one in Atlanta. We were technically the third family. My father was a dominant dictator and double my mother's age, so experientially, they had little in common. Decisions were his way or no way. My mother was a kept woman, a possession he owned, always at his beck and call. She never spoke an unkind word to him or about him. My mother felt powerless. Although my father was wealthy, he gave her little cash, and I watched her struggle with finances. Likewise, none of us kids received an allowance. Money was just one of his many methods of control. I felt kind-hearted toward my mother. I adored her, and saw my role as her protector. But as hard as I tried, I failed, and occasionally I saw her tears, the tears she tried to hide. My dad said tears were a sign of mental illness, and called my mother mentally ill. I learned not to cry, and for 30 years, I rarely shed a tear. My father terrorized and infuriated me because he had his eldest son institutionalized most of his life for mental health issues. I was scared my father would bribe a psychiatrist to institutionalize my mother. No one knew it, but all my growing up years, I didn't spend a penny on myself. Every cent I could save went into my defense fund, in case I needed to take him to court to protect my mother. To add to my fund, I stole whatever coins on his dresser I thought he wouldn't miss. As a creative thief, I was never caught. After his first wife died, we moved into his home. I had just turned 12. 11 months later, when I was 13 years old, my parents were married. Months passed, and my English teacher asked what last name I was to be called. She said my brother was going by a different name, so I switched. The unanswered questions and our living setting were
sample complete. Ready to continue?